Skipper celebrates. Every show is a celebration. Richard Skipper celebrates the best in entertainment. Each show, Richard delivers the artists you love, showcasing what makes them unique. Never gossipy. The antidote to a sometimes hectic world. Now, here's your host, Richard Skipper.
Happy Tuesday, everyone. What are you celebrating today? Welcome to the latest edition of Richard Skipper Celebrates. If you're here for the first time, welcome. My show is all about celebrating. Celebrating life, celebrating art, celebrating artists, celebrating whatever we can find to celebrate. And we have a lot to celebrate today. We can celebrate the fact that Facebook is back, or perhaps you don't want to celebrate the fact that Facebook is back. Facebook was down for 6 hours yesterday, and you would think that the world had come to an end. For some people, it was a crashing end of their world as they knew it. For me, it was just a pause. Mercury is in retrograde right now. So I think of this time as a time just to reflect, restart, rethink, reflect, just take a moment to step back. But that's not what today's show is about. Today is about restarting. And we've got the incredible Angela Vaccari here. She is coming back to do a cabaret show in New York. She's going to be returning to Don't Tell Mama, and she's opening at Don't Tell Mama on October 12th. And she's opening her show, yes,
October 12th.
Of Mercury Retrograde. Yes. So, Angela, I want to thank you for being here today. And my show, as I've said, is all about celebrating. I believe in celebrating life all the time. There's so much to celebrate. We are going to celebrate so much that's been going on. You just celebrated a major milestone in your life because you just celebrated a major anniversary.
Yes.
So congratulations with that. You're celebrating the fact that you're coming back to do a cabaret show, which we're going to talk about that. And we're also going to celebrate Mike Renzi. We just unfortunately just lost him. But rather than mourning him, let's celebrate the legacy. Let's celebrate what he left behind for us. But beyond all of this, what are you celebrating right now?
Well, it was a relief yesterday when I came into the city to rehearse, to do Don't Tell Mama right now, because for the past week, it's been very, very sad. You know, I think when things happen suddenly, that's difficult. You know, I think we had a little time to prepare, but it was too sudden. And it's a major, major, major loss, mostly for my grandson, Nicholas. You know, that was his attached to the shoulder, hip, body.
If anyone has to ask out there, we're talking, of course, about Nicholas King. And I first of all, I mean, talk about a voice. I was listening to Nicholas this morning. I'm such a huge fan of his work. I know that he's on his way right now to the Catskills, I think.
Yes, so, he said he's listening in the car. I said, make sure you pay attention.
Yes, I'm listening to him as, this morning. And, he's been on the show as well. And my heart goes out to him because I know that they had worked together for so long. How did you and Mike originally meet?
I have such a story with him. I mean, I guess we have time, right?
No, we've got time. Well, we'll make time.
Oh, It was, I mean, I'm from Rhode Island. He's from Rhode Island, of course, but I knew of him, but our paths never crossed, you know, in all those years of my traveling and all that, you know, it just never happened. So I think, I'm trying to think, Nicola was telling when he first met him, I think I was with Liza Minnelli. We were in the studio recording, and somebody said to her, they said, oh, you know, Mike Renzi's in the other studio, Jimmy Zach's, what's the name of the studio? Nola's.
Nola.
Okay, I knew it would come to me. Yeah, and he was there, and they said, oh, Mike Renzi's in the other studio. I went, Mike Renzi, he's from Rhode Island. I got to go over there and say hello. So she was busy. So I just ran to the next studio and I introduced myself to him. And that's how we met. And I said, I'm with Liza in the other studio. So he goes, oh, that's great. So I go back and tell her. She goes into that studio and she starts singing a song with him. That was the very, very first time I met him, but it was brief. And then I think I don't know how many years later, he moves back here to Rhode Island. And he's playing in places here in Rhode Island. And one night we were at the the Atlantic Beach Club. Excuse me, sir. No, okay.
Does he realize? I mean, how many years have you two been together?
I hear him. He's fiddling in the kitchen, but I know it picks up. Can you hear it?
Yes.
Go in the other room. Okay. So, and I'm tapping.
As long as he's preparing dinner for you, that's all that matters.
No, it's the one I prepared for him.
Okay, good.
You picked up on that, huh, Richard? Well, anyway, let me hear as I'm babbling. But anyway, he was at one of the local clubs in Newport, and we got to meet there. And then we went over to a pizza place afterwards, and him and Nicholas hooked up, and then we got really friendly. And then he started to play for Nicholas. And the best story ever. I mean, he's been here at my home hundreds of times. I can't count. And because for dinners and all for the year and a half of COVID, Nicholas and him did the virtual show here from my house for the
amazing. Just
yeah,
amazing.
That was fun every Wednesday night with the making the meals and the vodka drinks and all. It was a lot of fun. But the very first time I invited him for dinner, I was playing some records, and he said, Angela, do you have any recordings of yourself? I said, yeah, I'll play a couple. So I threw some on, and as I'm playing this song, he's sitting at the counter here, and he goes, wait a minute. He goes, that's me playing.
Baby, I'm Yours?
No, this was back in the days of RCA. I got the only recording in Italian for Speak Softly Love from The Godfather. And I recorded that for RCA. He was on the session. And he, because he knows his mind is amazing, and he had that run, you know, and everything. And I saw him go, hey, that's me. I was on that session. I mean, we screamed. I mean, who would have thought it? You know what I mean?
Were you in that session together?
Yes, I was. And I didn't even know his name. I didn't pay attention to his name, you know, because there was all these musicians. It was a massive orchestra. So I just, yeah, and sometimes they make us, in those days, you stand right next to the piano, you know, with your microphone, and he was right there. And I just was so into my Italian lyrics and doing this song because I was the only one that had it. Then Andy Williams came out with the English version, but I did the Italian. Wow. We all screamed. My whole family went, what? You know? I mean, it was just a freak story. But anyway, yeah, that was him.
Wow.
I mean, we've just been together for so long. And I miss him. My heart, and it literally hurts.
I can imagine, you know, just last week I was scheduled to interview Sarah Dash on the show on the 30th. We spoke on the 15th. I had interviewed her last year, and then she passed away on the 20th. And it was just sudden. It wasn't expected. And it seems, you know, in addition to COVID and all that we're feeling this year, it seems like there's been so much loss.
Yes.
And it's just, you know, so to everyone, carpe diem, cherish every single moment. Angela, as I've been doing my research on you, and there's so much there, the thing that I love beyond the career and the celebrities that you've worked with. And we could sit here and we could drop names until the cows come home. But what I love about you is that your bio on Twitter and Instagram and all other platforms, it doesn't begin with those major names that we will get to. It begins with wife, mother, grandmother, and those aspects of you. So family is very, very important to you. And the fact that you are this doting grandmother, with an amazing talent, driving to the Catskills right now. Talk about family and the importance of family. And I want to know a little bit about your family growing up as well, and where this gift of the music comes from, because it's deep in your soul as well.
Oh my gosh, let me bring forward all those stuff. There's am I okay? The mic's okay?
You're fine.
It's just so many things that, you know, in my high school years, you know, I sang in the plays and stuff, but I got married very young. I got married at 19, and by 20, I had my first child. And by 22, I had my second child. And then when I was 28, I don't know if you ever heard of this hotel. I'm sure if these different people are listening, in Westbrook, Connecticut, there was a hotel called Bill Hahn's. And all the New Yorkers would come up there, all the New Yorkers. And they would come and break in their acts. I mean, one night, my sister-in-law, who worked at the front desk, called me up. She says, "You got to come up here because there's this woman, that young girl, that's going to sing, and she's pretty good." And I go, "Oh, all right." So I get a babysitter for my girls, and I drive up to the hotels just down the street. And it was Barbara Streisand, and she comes. I can picture her come walking down the stairs, and I went, "Ooh," you know. She just had zero makeup on, hair just straight in a black dress. That was it. Just plain as ever. And I looked at my sister and I went, you know, just, you know, she's going to go on stage. Well, she opened her mouth and that was the end of it. You know, but I mean, then what he did for me, Bill Hahn, is I started just singing in the house. He was having a function and he said, "Why don't you have," because my husband at the time was working there also, and his mom, everybody worked there, and we were close. He said, "Why don't you have your wife come and sing some night?" So I did. And that started the whole ball rolling. Somebody that he knew introduced me to an arranger in New York. And I started going back and forth, learning. And then William Morris signed me.
Well, excuse me. I want to back up for a moment, if you don't mind. Did your parents also have a musical gift?
Nobody in my family did. Nobody. Isn't that funny?
Did you have any training at all?
Yes, when I was a young girl, I was 12. I think I started at 10 years old. I started piano, and at 11 and 12 years old, I was taking voice lessons from this gentleman here in town that studied in Italy. Mm-hmm. And I hated it, Richard, because I wanted to be out with my friends, and I'm doing this la 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 la. But he taught me so well that his technique that he taught me then is still with me today. And Nicholas goes crazy over this because I still sing in the same keys as I did 55 years ago.
Wow.
Because he taught me so well, and I've taken extreme care of my voice. And, you know, and I know.
Let's talk about that for just a moment. First of all, what was his name? Because I believe.
His name was Al Norcia. And, you know, and he lived here in Wesley, you know, and he was brilliant, and he had this and I've seen it now in books, but I know he came. I always say it had come from him. It's called hunger, and I see it out there now. But it's a hunger that makes you go up in your mask, and I teach all my students that, you know. And I've had, you know, singers call me, say, "I can't hit this note. Let me hear it." And I say, "Okay, do it like this," and bingo, the note comes out. And I learned that from him when I was a young girl, you know. So he was whatever technique he learned in Italy at that time.
And you've carried this through with
I have not adopted any other person's techniques. I've kept my own, And if my student wants to spread out to someone else and learn different, they can. But my goal is that whoever I am teaching, I want them to master what I'm showing you. Because if you master these few things, it'll carry you forever. And then you can continue on with stretching, you know, your education with voice and all that. Of course, you know, you learn as you on the job, you learn all kind of tricks, but those foundations that I learned as a young girl from this man has carried me to this day. And I've taught it to Nicholas too, of course, you know.
Well, the William Morris Agency you mentioned, it was the crown jewel at that time. How did you get your foot in the door of the William Morris Agency?
Well, I used to go into New York and there was this club. Of course, I'm not going to remember it because my brain is fried. But I remember seeing Bette Midler there one night too. And people could get up and sing. So I got up and sing and there was this, I remember his name. His name was, I think, Mike Smolins or something. Like, no, oh, wait a minute. Here I go. Oh, it'll come to me. Isn't that awful, Richard?
No, I have those moments too.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
I'm right there with you.
So anyway, and he was there and he asked me to go in for an interview and that was it. You know, I got signed. And then I started working all the Playboy clubs all over this, whatever city they were in, except the overseas. I didn't do that one. But I did all the Playboy clubs. You'd see yourself coming and going because you do three or four shows a night in all the different rooms.
You know, let's talk about that for just a moment. There's a wonderful book out there. My friend Patty Farmer wrote a book years ago about the Playboy clubs and the circuit of that. Once you got your foot into the Playboy club, and if you can talk a little bit about the circuit of getting into all those clubs and at that time, what it meant to put together, number one, a band, or was it house musicians that
house
you were
musicians always.
House musicians getting charts and arrangements put together and what that world was like, which of course, unfortunately doesn't exist today.
No. Well, it was easy because of that one introduction I got with this arranger in New York and he started writing my charts and his name was Billy Rizzo. Mm-hmm. And Billy, do you remember that name?
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Yay, I got a name right. Well, I went, you know, had an appointment, you know, I was in Chicago because he was based in Chicago. So through William Morris, I got to do Chicago. And he came in and then he interviewed me and he said, I'm putting you on the whole circuit. And I said, you better, because we're Italian. No.
Good for you.
You better take care of me. No, but he... and he just put me on all the circuits and it was amazing. And I met so many people. I learned so much because you're heckled. The guys in the club want to see the bunnies. They don't want to hear you singing a nice, pretty ballad or something. And, but I worked hard and I would get them, you know, I don't want to like brag about it, but I paced my show.
Hedda, brag.
I feel funny, but I would get them by probably the fourth or fifth song. I had their attention and I took it away from the bunnies for a few minutes, you know. But
now,
it was,
were you under exclusive contract to the Playboy Club? Were you able to pick other gigs at that time?
Sure. I started doing the Catskills. That's why you start, you know, working all those.
And who were some of the agents or people that you were working with in the Catskills? And were you working as an opening act in the Catskills? Or
all the comedians. The rap office.
Absolutely. I know the rap office.
Of course, I bet you do.
Yes, and I know personally, but for our listeners out there, there was a certain formula for working in the Catskills regarding female singers and the male comics. So if you can tell them a little bit about that.
Well, once you get into that circuit with the comics, you know, and then the comics, if they liked you a lot and you really loosened up the audience for them, they would request you a lot. So I was a strong opening act at the time. You know, I had my husband at the time, who was my arranger and conductor. and wrote all my charts.
Now, that helps.
That helps. Yeah, somebody just said that to me the other day.
That helps tremendously.
It was Billy Stretch. He said it. That helps if you.
Well, Billy, if you're watching, it helps. You know,
that's just what he said to me. It helps. The charts, yeah, it helps. So I used to do shows on the weekends. It'd be Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And just drive up. And I lived in Jersey, so it was just
Angela, talk about the mindset of being an opening act. Because let's face it, the audience is not there to see you.
Right.
They're there to see the headliner. And they are, you know, not necessarily in the best of spirits when you come out for your act to warm them up. How do you warm an audience up?
It's the material. I adjusted every show I did to the audience I was in, and I had enough charts to do it. And that's the key, because you can't sing for yourself. You got to sing for the type of audience that you have. That's so vital, you know. So, and I kept myself current, you know, but I kept also popular stuff that I knew that audience. And then I did a lot of cruise ship audiences, and I had a cruise ship show. I had, you know, the Catskill shows. I had the Playboy shows. You know, they were all different ones. Oh, I'm going to do this one tonight, you know. And I was, you know, touring cities. Because at times, you know, for quite a while, I had a 7-piece band that they would travel in the van and I would fly to the cities. But it's nice when you have your own band, too, when you start doing all those big supper clubs. I did them all.
Did you have the instinct of knowing the right material to choose, or did you have people who were helping you choose that material?
I think I had, I would kind of look up the demographics where I was, the age groups. I would ask the agents. Like, what's the type of audience? I would ask that, because it's all different everywhere you go. So I'd make sure I'd throw something in that I knew they were going to like. And once you do that, they like you.
And after a certain while, obviously, as you're doing your act and as people are getting to know you and you start getting asked back, there are certain songs that people want to hear you do again. Tony Bennett once said that Judy Garland taught him that every time you do your show, have at least the standards that they want to hear again, but throw in at least one or two new songs, which I always thought was a very smart thing to do. When did you start, you know, getting songs pitched to you?
Oh, when I was with RCA, you know, I was getting songs pitched to me. And sometimes, you know, being on the road, there was a lot of people that wrote great songs, you know, and one of my... my guitar player, he wrote a beautiful song called The End of Our Song. And that story, at the time, I was, like I said, was RCA. Mm-hmm. We pitched it, Charlie Colello. Do you know Charlie Colello? Mm-hmm. Massive arrangement. Mm-hmm. He was writing an album for Barbra Streisand. So he loved the song. So he played it for her. She fell in love with it, and she wanted to record it. And then so... we were like elated, you know, that she was going to use that song, but the Columbia and RCA, they couldn't, you know, so she came out with My Heart Belongs to Me, you know, on the Superman album.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but that song was pitched to me. It's on my album, and mm-hmm. it's a beautiful song. I'm happy that I have it. I did record it, so it's on my album.
And when was the first time that you heard yourself on the radio?
When I was 5 years old. They had a.
How many people can say that?
Well, because downtown Wesley, they had a show called Buddy and the Gang. So my mother would dress me up in these little gowns, and we'd go walk downtown, and we'd go into the radio station, and I would sing my songs. I don't even know how I did it. I can't. But the piano player was so good, and whatever song I picked, he would play like easy songs, of course. But I had to stand on a stool to reach the microphone, even though it was a boom. I was so little. But I mean, in some, you know, you could hear yourself on that. But the very first time that really meant a lot to me was driving down Route 46 in New Jersey. And I heard My Baby, I'm Yours, the disco hit that I had on the radio. I almost went up in a pole. Ah!
So many people, you know, Melissa Manchester, you know, when I interviewed her, the same thing. I mean, that first moment that you hear your, and it's a different world now that you don't hear yourself on the radio the way it was at that point. Yeah. I mean, the business has changed so much, obviously, since it was when you first got in the business. If you can talk a little bit about this from your perspective, what are some of the things that you think have changed in the business that you think are really incredible changes? And what are some of the things that you feel are not necessarily for the betterment of the industry?
Okay, so what part of the business, I mean, music-wise or?
Music-wise, as far as the structure of the way the industry itself is set up now.
Well, it's so different now with the record labels. You know, we can't, when you would sign a record, if a record deal, you get a deal. Now you got to go with it almost all finished and you did it yourself. And then they'll start distributing it. It's not like it was before. You get those massive record, you know, contracts. They were great. It's not like that today. You got to make sure you got to go do it yourself, record, master it, have it finished, present it. And you got to have a good agent that's going to be able to book you to promote it. It's hard. It's hard for people today. But you know what's making it the best, though?
Yeah.
I mean, my gosh, a TikTok? Didn't anybody? I know.
Are you on TikTok?
No, I should get on there. I have to
Well,
do
let's
that.
Do it together. Well, yeah, no, I want to ask you. I mean, there's so many talented people out there, and a lot of talented people, let's face it, don't make the leap. What was the moment for you where you said, "I'm going to really make a go of this. I'm going to see if I can make a career out of this"?
It was when I got signed. Yeah, and I had two kids. I had my two daughters, and they meant more to me than my career. That was an issue there, of course, because I had them first.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And I wasn't planning on, you know, when I was 19, 20 to do what I did. I started at 28, you know, and so it was, you know, them. I mean, my biggest thing was with Don Rickles when I turned a tour down with him, you know, because I had been away 6 weeks already. And I said, no, I have to go home, you know, and they were in high school at the time, you know, so I wanted to be with them. So it was hard. It's hard when you have a family, you know, that it can be difficult. But you know what? I can tell you my story, how I got to Vegas.
I would love to hear that story.
Well, it was the phone call that I got. Now I remember the name of the agent. Ding, ding, ding. I got a phone call one day at my house in Jersey, and the other end says, "Hello, I'm Rodney Dangerfield." And I said, yeah, and I'm Queen Sheba, whatever. I hung up. So he calls back again, and he goes, "Wait a minute, this is Rodney Dangerfield." So I hang up again. Calls back again. He goes, "Ed Sommerfeld." That's his name. I got it. Ed Sommerfeld was my agent.
And he didn't say to you, "I get no respect." You gave him no respect.
No, but, you know, and I went, oh, I'm so sorry. Oh, why are you calling me? Like, why is he calling me? Ed gave him my number. And he asked me if I would go to Las Vegas with him. He was opening at the Tropicana with him. Mm. I had my own band too. And he said, just for 2 weeks. I go, all right. Of course, we go. But I mean, but he had to come out. He came out to Jersey. I was singing in one of the clubs on Route 46. And he comes out there to catch me. And the place went crazy, you know. But he came out there to catch one of my shows just to make sure, you know, that he was going to like me to open for him. And he did. And so we went out there. And I mean, which I can remember, when I got off the plane, of course, the band had to drive down with all their equipment. But when I got off the plane and drove down towards the Tropicana, I looked up at the marquee. That man made sure my name was almost as big as his. I was like, and I cried. I went, oh, my God. I mean, it was.
Was that the first time that you saw your name on a marquee?
Yes.
Wow.
I mean, like in Las Vegas, I mean, I just, he was amazing. So after the 2 weeks we were there, he said, "You got to stay on. You're going to stay on for the rest of the." "No, I can't, Rodney. I've got kids. I can't stay away with them." "Oh, don't worry. We'll fly them down. I'll get my kids and we'll have all our kids here." And that's what he did. And we stayed there, I think it was 2 months.
Wow, that's an amazing story.
It is. He was awesome.
Yeah. Was that the moment for you where you felt that you had made it? Or are there other defining moments throughout your career where you were pinching yourself saying, these are those moments where I feel I really belong in this industry?
Yeah, I think that there were quite a few, but I think that was the major one. Because when I walked out on the stage, I remember saying to myself, well, it's just a stage, but I'm in Las Vegas. You know, I mean, to me, that was the entertainment capital of the world. You know, I mean, still, it is still the biggest, but, you know, I was like, oh my God. And it was just so good. I remember so much of him. He was amazing. He was just a regular guy. Just, you know, took me over. He goes, we're going to go over to do the Merv Griffin show. I go, we are? He goes, yeah. And I'm going to tell you what to sing. I go, okay. And we flew over to LA and did it. And
How did your life change after the first time that you appeared on the Merv Griffin show? Because you appeared on the Merv Griffin show a number of times. Well, so after appearing on the Merv Griffin show, were you starting to get recognized wherever you went? Mm-hmm. Talk about those major changes in your life.
Well, that's it helped a lot, you know, especially coming back home to New York. I think that's where I wanted it the most. You know, and the supper clubs they had there. And, you know, I can see, I think one time I was there with Count Basie, but my name was easy. It was easy for me to get in. It was recognizable. And in like when I'd go do those shows at the Catskills, I was recognizable. It wasn't just, you know, people knew me. And now you're known, you know. And you get the write-ups, you know, if you get the write-ups. We didn't get the publicity like you get today, mm-hmm. you know, because of the internet. You know, you got to be fortunate enough to have a local paper write you up wherever you are. And, you know, you hope that people come and, you know, see you in these clubs, local, which they were good ones. So, but once I went and then I returned, I would do well, even better, you know, they get to know you. But that really helped big time. TV helped.
Absolutely. Then. I want to talk about those moments that give an entertainer such as yourself gravitas in a career. What are some of those defining moments that really started giving you gravitas in terms of being able to negotiate in your contracts, able to get you the jobs that you want, the gigs that you want, the opportunities that perhaps you weren't able to get the day before, if you know what I'm saying?
I was very forceful. I wasn't cocky.
That's my next question.
You know, and I'm that way still today. Now, not basically more about myself anymore, but with Nicholas, and you know, I manage Billy Gilman, you know, and so
I hope to have sitting here soon.
Yes, he is. He's going to do it. Very, great, very happy great. To do it. And you know, so I got him his record deal. You know, I mean, I would say things like say for him, well, if you were smart, you'd come and see him, and if you don't come, you're going to lose.
Good for you.
You know, and they, you know, when you know you've got a product, you got to sell it. And if you don't have that authority and firmness in your voice, the person on the other end knows this is just, you know, like how many times I get even today, I got a grandson that can really sing and I want, can you teach them? I'm like, right, you know, but because the grandmother feels you can really sing. But when you got a real artist that you can sell and you don't have that firmness in your voice. I mean, I don't know how these agents do it, but I always did better myself. I had some managers up in the day, and I'd say, you know what? I don't need to be giving you this percentage. I can handle this. Mm-hmm. Because I knew what I had. I knew what I could do, you know.
Well, do you know that Dixie Carter, I don't know if you've ever seen the clip of her when she was on the Dick Cavett Show. She always dreamed of playing the Carlisle. Do you know this story?
Yeah, no, yes, there.
She wanted to play the Carlisle, right. And her manager said, oh, that's just in some hotel on the Upper East Side. That's nothing important for you. And she's going, it's the Carlisle. And she fired the manager. And of course, she went to the Carlisle year after year after year. I want to talk to you about ambition in this business. Even early on, you mentioned that it was getting signed to William Morris that you really began to pursue a career. Were you ambitious before that moment, or did the ambition come as a result of that?
I think it came at a kind of a slow pace because of being a mother first.
Mm-hmm.
And that was I was very family oriented, and that's how I was raised. You know, it was all family all the time. And so that was more important to me. You mm-hmm. know, I would be scared to kind of deviate from that, you know, but I was very fortunate to have the most amazing mother that would step in for me and family and the kids had an aunt, the dad's sister, I had so many people to depend on. Mm-hmm. So the desire came more, and it became easier because if I had to leave, you know, who they were with meant a lot. That's the key. Mm-hmm. But I'm so excited. I mean, I don't want to jump the gun, but I mean, I'm excited about doing this show. And
we're gonna get there. We're definitely gonna get there.
Well,
I am all about celebrating, as you know. So I'm going to ask you a question, and I don't want you to name any names or give away a situation that would give away a situation, but this is a tough business to be in. And I want to know if there was a particular situation where it wasn't so rosy for you, a difficult situation that you had to get through in this business, and how you were able to get through a difficult situation to get to the other side, and what it was that got you to the other side, whether it be faith, maybe it was family, whatever it was that got you there. If you can bring us to, you know, a situation like that.
Well, I mean, when my husband and I, because I've been married, you know, I had children with the first husband, and my second husband was my arranger conductor. We worked together for 17 years, and we traveled and did all these jobs. That was our life, you know, that's how we lived, you know, by me singing, you know, that was how I supported the family. And when we were going to separate and get divorced, I had to make a massive decision to leave New Jersey, New York, which is, I was right outside of New York. And I wanted to come home. And home is Westerly, Rhode Island, mm-hmm. this little town. I wanted to come back to where my family was. You know, my one daughter was married already, and my other one was still single, home with me. So we finally did. We moved up here. And I was talking about it the other night, and Billy Stritch is so funny. That's why he said it. And so Nicholas goes, well, what happened when you got divorced? I said, did you get a house? Did you get this? I went, nope, I just got my charts.
Well, you bring up a very interesting point. There comes a time in a person's life where, I mean, obviously you love to perform, you love to entertain, but there becomes a point where it's not only the entertainment, but it becomes a means to an end. You have to do it to support a family and everything. When did that moment happen in your life?
I don't know if I ever stopped working enough where it got like that. I think that I had the opportunity, all of a sudden I decided to start teaching. I had like 26 students in a heartbeat. Now I'm on my own, mm-hmm. and I'm living in a condo, me and my daughter, and I want to live on my own, and I want to support myself. I don't want to be traveling all the time. So I did that. I put an ad in the paper, and I got all these students, and I'm up here in Westerly, you know. And then when my second daughter got married, now I'm living alone. So the rents, the this, the that, and there people are saying to me, why don't you take in a roommate? No, I don't want anybody. I want to stay by myself. You know, I want to be able to do what I need to do, and I just wanted to be by myself. And I did that for quite a while, and then I met my husband. My kids said if I didn't marry him, I was out.
Good for you. Well, before we get to your show, you are also a phenomenal vocal coach and a teacher. How did that all come about?
It was like I said, I needed to support myself more. And I never taught before, but I just started and I got all these students. And as I'm teaching them, they're learning really well. And I'm like, oh, and I just started teaching what I was taught. And I think it's the difference is, too, is because some of my students, you know, were already out there working. And they knew that they could, I could relate to them because I'm a performer, too. I'm not just a teacher that's in the studio. I've been out there. I've worked everywhere. I've gone through it all. So I've experienced it. So I know what you're dealing with, and I can tell them how to handle it. They weren't just little kids. They were older people that are having issues and troubles and this and that. I mean, all kind of troubles. And because I experienced so much, I mean, I could sit here all night and tell you all my experiences. I mean, I sometimes
have to come back for part two.
I know. Sometimes I think, how did I ever do get through it? But you know, I'm very strong that way. You know, sometimes I can feel weak, but I get past it. But that's my goal, Richard. I want people, when I talk to them about singing and coaching, I want them to be themselves. I never impart me in them. Never. This is how I do it. This is how you should. Never. I always learn them. I want to know what they're like, and I take it from there. And that's the way it has to be. And I just love it because I see the results. And my whole key is, like I say, all I want from you is just to master the foundation that I'm giving you and take care of that instrument. Because if you got a guitar as your instrument, when you're done with it, you don't fling it. You put it in a case, mm-hmm. take care of it. Well, this is this big. You better take care of it. And you've done a show. Don't you dare go in a club and talk over loud people after you just sang. Because as the time goes on, that voice is going to go down, down, down. Mm-hmm. And that's what happens. You got to be disciplined. And I have been all my life to this day.
Well,
God. I'm not even working that much, but I don't ever want to lose it, you know.
Where does that discipline come from?
I think the way I was raised, mm-hmm. I think I also think going to a Catholic school for 9 years with those nuns slapping your wrist. They were brutal. I mean, you couldn't do anything, you know, you used to be so afraid. I think I learned a lot of discipline then for those 9 years, you know, and my mother was, my parents were great. But she was strict, you know, but. I think that's where I learned it the most.
So yeah. October 12th, don't tell Mama, you are going to be returning after, I mean, Stephen Mosier wrote an incredible article about you, came out just before we went live, so I saw this. 40 years it's been since you've done a cabaret show.
Yeah, like my own. Yeah.
But the weird thing, you're only 39 and 40 years. So I cannot
believe, love you.
I cannot believe it's been 40 years. You told me your reasons for coming back. So why now?
I don't know. I've been singing around here a little bit and I don't know, people are being so awesome to me about it. Why aren't you doing more? Why don't you sing more? I mean, you know, why? And I said, yeah, I know. Then I get invited to go to Provincetown by this wonderful lady, Patricia Fitzpatrick.
Patricia Fitzpatrick, Cabaret Fest. Right?
And I go there and she hires me to be a coach, you know, and then of course sing a little bit. So we did it not this past June. I did it this June too, but the year before was COVID. So it was very, very small. There was probably about 10 of us. It was very small because we all had to be COVID. And so, but we still got through it, you know, it was okay. But this year was amazing. And of course, Michael Renzi was there for me as my accompanist. And I was able to work with all these other great people from New York, Tracy Stark and you know, I mean, there's just so many that, and you dropped something. You all right, honey? So it was just so good. And of course, my Sydney, Sydney mm-hmm. Meyer.
Sydney Meyer.
And we just had such a great time. And I taught, and I just got so many compliments. And I was like, and I'm like this, really? Because I never overthink of anything about myself. I just don't, you know. So when you hear it, so evidently I did a good job because they asked me back again. But I was able to do a little bit of my own show there. And I feel stupid, but I was the only one. I got a big standing ovation.
No, why would you feel stupid about that?
I don't know. I don't know.
I will tell you something. I have never felt stupid about getting a standing ovation.
Because yesterday at rehearsal, Sydney's, he's so cute. He's just sitting there. He's going, my God, you were the only one that got this big standing ovation. So I'm so excited that you're going to be. And it was him and my grandson, Nicholas, that said, you need to put a show. You need to get performing at Mama's. Do you need to get back? And I'm like, no, I'm not doing. Nicholas says, oh yeah, I already got you. I've had your show written out for I don't know how long. He's kept it in a drawer. He said, you're going to do it. You're going to book it. Sydney, we're going to book her. And Nani, here's your songs. And I went, oh my God, Nicholas.
He even charted it out for you.
No, they're all my charts from years ago.
I mean, he picked the.
He picked the songs. And the order. And I wanted to try to change something. He wouldn't even let me because I'm telling you, here he is telling me now. And you know what? He's right. he really is. Because I couldn't even think about it. I'm like, oh, I don't have time to be thinking of this. Blah, blah, blah. But no, he is so excited in Sydney. They're just so great. You know, so now I'm getting excited because yesterday, Nicholas and he had come back here to be with us for a little bit. And we drove to New York went to the club. And Ted Firth was there, of course, and he's mm-hmm. going to play for me. Ray Machica.
Couldn't you find anyone better?
No.
Dad, I love you. I love him so much.
So I got all my charts and I get them out and we start. And I just turned over and looked at Ted Firth and Nicholas, and I just went, oh my God. You know, it was like so easy for him, you know, and my charts are kind of intricate, you know, that's how it was back then. But the songs are very recognizable, but they're done my way, you know, my renditions. So it's going to be fun. I can't wait to hear it with the band. I didn't have the bass and drums. I just can only imagine. Because
What do you want audiences to come away with from this show? I mean, is this an autobiographical show, or is this just getting it out there and letting it, just throwing it out there and doing it again? What is your ultimate goal with the show?
My ultimate goal is that I hope they like me. You know, I really
Angela, come on.
No, because there's so many amazing artists all over New York City. I mean, because of this, we see all the artists. I can't be in New York all the time, you know, because I live, you know, 2.5 hours away and it's not, you know, hop, skip, and a jump. But I see so much on here and everyone's so amazing. Like, I always go to the cabaret convention with Katie Sullivan, you know, I go to watch it because Nicholas is on, and I see all these awesome singers. Mm-hmm. They just, you know, they're so good, and I'm in awe of them. So, because I go to my husband, I go, do you think they're going to like me? He just walks away.
Are you in the cabaret convention this year?
What?
Are you going to be performing in the cabaret convention this year?
Oh, I wasn't asked.
Well, maybe next year. Next year, are you watching?
I think years back when Nicholas was little, I think I said kiddingly, well, maybe not. So she was in the dressing room. I said, KT, wouldn't it be cute, Nani and Nicholas? She just looked at me, you know. But anyway.
I regrets that decision now.
I don't know. I love her. I think she's a great lady.
Oh, I love KT very much. Love her.
Yeah. So I'm just, I'm going to tell some stories in front of certain songs because they all do have a story, how they've come about. And Nicholas worked on that with me, and he comes up with a nice way to say it, you know. I just got to try to get it out because I have a tendency to babble.
First of all, I want to thank you for being here today. Before we wind up, one of my favorite shows was Inside the Actor's Studio with James Lipton. And what we're going to do right now is my little homage to James Lipton. At the end of his shows, he would have his list of questions. And this is my list of questions. And these are just random questions I'm going to throw at you. And the first question is, what is the best habit that you've ever had?
Habit? Just normal, like life, not an entertainer, yeah. Just the best habit? Sure.
Well, I think you mentioned earlier your discipline. So maybe that would be it. But, you know, what do you consider a great habit that you have?
Got to think, because I know, right? I mean, what do? I don't know. I honestly can't think. I know being disciplined and trying to, eat right, be stay healthy. I mean, those are my habits. I mean, I take tons of vitamins.
Well, me too. Yeah.
Right now, I mean, I'm just trying to think if I have a habit. I should ask my husband, do I have any habits, Al? Yes, you do, he says. Like what? He said, my best habit is taking care of my vocal cords.
Very good.
But it's true. You know what? I mean, that is true. I've always been like that. Yeah, I do.
What was the worst experience you ever had on stage?
Oh. You really want me to tell it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I was singing up in Canada, and I was getting me. I think I was singing like, you're nobody till somebody loves you. And out of the corner of my eye, I see this. It was like I was in a circle. You know, the stage is here, and the seats are all around like this, right? So Richard, all of a sudden, I see this guy walking around. I mean, a woman walking like this, and she's like then I'm kind of like trying to sing, but she caught my eye and I could see her going all the way around. And she came all the way to the right, my right side. And there was a guy and a girl sitting there. And I guess it was her husband cheating on her. So she reaches down and grabs the woman's hair, which was a wig, and swung it on the floor in front of me. And I was in the middle of the song and I said, all righty then, as I tried to kick it back to the lady, the audience went crazy. I mean,
and you're nobody till somebody loves you. Equal time. What is the best experience you ever had on stage?
Best experience. Oh, there were so many now. I got to try to think. Yeah, there was just so many touching moments that, I mean, too many to think. There were a lot.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Yeah,
there really were a lot. Oh, I know one thing. I think the most touching one I did, when my record was coming out in New Jersey, I did this big show. It was like a send-off for me. I was going on tour. And I remembered this. And the place was filled. I had the big orchestra. And I looked down and I saw my mother through the lights.
Ah, just, wow.
She had that gray, and she put that blue rinse in her hair, you know, and she was just beaming up at me. And I never forgot that. That was very touching.
Wow. That's a great story. What is the most elated moment that you've ever experienced in this business?
Elated? Oh, probably when Nicholas was 5 years old and I was singing up with the Balsams and he had his little tuxedo on and I introduced him and he came out and just blew everybody away.
Oh, I can only imagine. I've seen the clip of him on the Johnny Carson show. What made your parents the happiest about you growing up?
Oh, I was so spoiled. I mean, my father spoiled me rotten. So I don't know. I can't think of that. Am I the worst answering person?
No, this is great.
No.
What is your finest quality now as a child to your parents? What do you think is the finest quality that you have now that your parents would totally be proud of?
Oh, the most important quality that my mother always made sure that I did, the quality is to keep love and everyone together in the family and keep the peace. She never wanted to see. If you got an issue, you straighten that out and you just move on. And I can tell you that I have a brother that is amazing. We've never argued to this day. No arguments. And my two daughters, I mean, they're girls, but they may bicker a little bit, but they've never, ever stayed mad. And that, to me, is the key. That's as long as you have peace in the family, everybody gets along. You got a problem, go to the person, work it out, and move on.
Good for you. That's great. And what is your best quality as a parent to your children? You just answered it.
I think so.
Yes.
Because if they're listening, they'll go,
And my last question to you is, what is the biggest favor that you've ever done for a friend?
I don't know.
Well, I'll tell you, I can answer for myself sitting here today with me.
Oh,
yeah.
Jen.
This is great.
This is great.
Don't go anywhere for a moment. I want to thank everybody for being here. I mean, this was a total delight. Remember, October 12th at Don't Tell Mama. All of the information is going to be in the details on YouTube. Thank you all for being here this afternoon. I don't take it for granted that you could have been anywhere else for the last hour. The fact that you chose to spend it with us for the last hour means a lot to me. And I'm sure I can speak for Angela when I say this. If this was your first time here, please, please, please subscribe. It's all about building an audience. That's what we all do in this business. If you subscribe to this channel, it pops up for other people. It gets the word out about what we're doing. Please tell your friends. There are over 300 other artists that I have celebrated on this platform. And I'm all about celebrating artists and their body of worth. That's what this is about. I'm not about gossip. I'm not about going into people's closets. It's about celebrating their worth. So please check out the other people that I've celebrated and look at the people that are coming up. And if you want to know what's coming ahead, you can go to richardskipper.com and sign up for my newsletter. It comes out every Monday morning at 10 a.m. and you will not be spammed, I promise you. And if you did indeed like today's show, hit the like button, leave a comment here on YouTube. That will increase the ranking of this video. And the more people that see it, the more that will show up at Don't Tell Mama and the rest of this long run that Angela is about to have at Don't Tell Mama.
Oh.
So yes, it's gonna happen. I also end every show by telling everyone to go out and do something nice for somebody else without expecting anything in return. Go to your Facebook friends list now that Facebook is back up and running again. You know, I wanna mention something. Excuse me for using this platform to say so. A lot has been said in the last 24 hours about Facebook being used as a platform for hatred. I don't believe that we can use it for such. Use it as a platform for love. Go to your Facebook friends list and the fifth name that pops up, reach out with a phone call, not an email message, not a text message, not a private message, a phone call. And let that person know what they mean in your life. And, you know, as a dear friend of ours says, David Friedman, he says, we're all in this together, but we're not in the same boat. And I always say, if you're going to be out in a boat, make sure that you bring a skipper along. So, Angela, I'm going to leave the screen and you're going to have the platform all to yourself. You've got the final word today. Anything that you want to say to everyone who's watching, it could be to build upon something we talked about today. Anything that we didn't talk about that you wish we had, or just any message that you want to put out to anyone who's watching now. I thank you for the gifts that you've given to the world and that you're going to continue to give. Thank you. You are a true gem. I love you.
Thank you, Richard. You are a gem. You're a gem, Richard. He is amazing. And we really need to all subscribe to this channel. He's just, this has been awesome. What I didn't probably say was that I bring up Mike Renzi because he's so, you know, it's such an awesome, he was such an awesome man and such a tragic death so fast, is that I always tell my kids, try to say everything that you can to those around you that you love, the good. Tell them while they're alive. Don't wait till they're gone because they can't hear you. And it means so much. Don't be afraid. Tell someone how much you love them. Tell them what you love about them. I am such a firm believer in that, because if they're taken away from you so quick, you didn't say it. They didn't hear it. So that's one of the things that I really repeat a lot to people. Say it now. Don't tell me how much you don't like me. don't say it after. You can say it after. I don't care. But anyway, this was a great opportunity for me. And I do have trouble talking about myself. I just do, because I guess I kind of take a lot of myself with a grain of thought. You know, it's just, I am what I am, you know. Remember that song, I Am What I Am? And so it's hard, but I really hope that when I do this show next week that I'm in good voice and people come. I really hope for that. And I love Sydney to allow me to do this, and my grandson and my family are so supportive. And my, I call my little boy, Billy Gilman, who I've had in my life for 27 years or more. No, 25 years. Yeah. So, and I just love so many people, and I really wish that we all keep showing love, because it's so important today. There's so much hate going on. It's not worth it. And I just love some of the questions that he asked, but some of them are hard to answer, because I mean, life goes by so quick, but certain things we do keep in our memories. But I don't know. I just think Richard's great. I can't thank him enough for having me on today. This was great. I hope I was entertaining enough for you, and I hope that you come and see me.